Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from Jeld-Wen. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all Jeld-Wen windows today. View our entire selection of Jeld-Wen windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
A good Friday morning, everybody. It's a Friday morning that if you went to sleep early, you probably are a little surprised at how it all shook out for the Eagles. Many people prognosticated maybe this player, but maybe not in this spot. How did it all happen? It was a record night of offensive players. Paul Domowicz, we saw, 14 straight go off the board before a defensive player finally went. And I guess at that moment, Howie Roseman said, I don't need my phone tonight. I'll just sit right where I'm at. And they get the guy they probably would have been very comfortable moving up to get. How big of a surprise is it that we're talking about this player at pick 22?
Well, I mean, they were, like Howie said last night, things fell for them. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. When you're picking that far down, you're at the mercy of the teams in front of you. 14 offensive players right out of the gate, the run on quarterbacks, those things kind of helped set the table for them. And then their choice became which cornerback to take. I mean, they had the two top cornerbacks right fall into their lap, and they went with Mitchell.
14 consecutive offensive players to start Dombo. The previous record was 7, and it jumps to 14. I mean, that's unbelievable. We're sitting there in the Eagles media house, and it's just offense, 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 offense. 6 quarterbacks in the top 12. There's going to be a lot of GMs unemployed in a couple of years, I think, when it comes to that. And the craziest pick of all, the Atlanta pick with Michael Penix at number 8, after paying Kirk Cousins $100 million. And now they picked a quarterback number 8. What the heck are they doing? Everything broke for the Philadelphia Eagles. There are some crazy thought processes in NFL buildings these days, Damo. You've been around a long time. Do you agree with that or disagree?
Wasn't that the Atlanta doing, guys, the Green Bay draft a quarterback when you have one?
Yeah, just look at Atlanta. Like you had mentioned, not only picking a quarterback, Terry Fontenot has put his career on the line here with that move. And
crazy.
The fact that they passed on Bill, a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah.
When they passed on Bill Belichick for Dan Quinn or for
Raheem Morris. Yeah.
Raheem Morris. So, it's all about offense in this league. You got to, score points. You need a quarterback. That basically, teams are willing to reach. But the bottom line is, those 6 quarterbacks that went in the top 12, probably maybe 4? 3 of them are going to make it. Maybe.
Yeah, I would say maybe.
Bust, so.
And by the way, Caleb Williams, who tremendous prospect, and I think he would be number one overall in most years. He's going to a situation that they never develop quarterbacks, so I wouldn't even put a check mark in his column.
Yeah.
Never mind the Bo Nixes of the world, who, by the way, I think is the third oldest quarterback in the NFL coming in. But back to the Eagles, Damo. If you see the one guy, and Howie kind of talked about this after the draft, that, you know, you have a preference, even though they had a bunch of guys and they felt very comfortable when they got the 15. And they said, you know, we got a bunch of guys on the board that we're going to get one of them that we're comfortable with at 22. But he did say you always have a preference. Troy Fatanu went number 20 to Pittsburgh. He was the one guy who I said maybe they'll go up a little bit early, and maybe other than Mitchell. And they did neither, and they took ended up with Mitchell. And they're going to say that was their first choice, which would have been your first choice between Troy Fatanu and Quinyon Mitchell.
Well, throw in the other corner, too.
Terrion Arnold. Yeah. Or if you like Terrion Arnold. Yeah.
I you know, Mitchell. I mean, I probably Mitchell. You know, I don't have – you know, they clearly on their board when they got to 15, I mean, it sounds like Mitchell was their top-rated player still on the board, so it wasn't a hard choice for them. You know, it's an interesting contrast with the corners because – you know, they went Mac over SEC.
Power five football.
You know, they went off coverage guy over a press corner. You know, I hope this isn't a Jalen Reagor, Justin Jefferson decision. But, you know, I mean, it's interesting. It's an interesting decision they made. You know, I think Mitchell's going to turn out to be a good player. I preferred Arnold going in only because of the versatility he gives them. You can play him anywhere on the back end. You know, this guy, they made it clear that he's going to play outside corner. I'm not saying he can't play inside, but
yeah. Now, I knew it coming into the draft. I didn't put a lot of stock into it, but after they made the pick, I put more stock into it. And that's the fact that Nick Sirianni, one of his best friends, is the Toledo coach, and Larry Karras' kid is the defensive coordinator. And you know, and I was telling Mike Damo, when you got a big time prospect at Toledo, you want to sell that kid as a normal college coach because you want to recruit off him and say, look what we did for this. And everybody around the league is getting that sort of view of Quinyon Mitchell. And Nick knows everything. You know, they're telling him the truth. The good, the bad, the indifferent, and I think it was all good. I think that was a big part of this. Agree or disagree?
Agree. You know, you just hope that the relationship wasn't too close and played a part in the decision more so than what they saw on film. You know, it kind of scares me that they didn't know he could play press until they saw him at the Senior Bowl. Because he never, you know, he didn't play it at Toledo.
Yeah. But he played in like a weird defense where they gave him one side of the field, but it wasn't press. It was like he was allowed to roam a little bit. So I don't know how that's going to translate, but it wasn't, you know, he did, you know, lock down at a lower level, granted, but lock down one side of the field. So
if Mitchell, excuse me. If Mitchell doesn't make it, it's one more reason they can fire Nick Sirianni, right? Because he obviously
didn't put into this. I didn't think of that. Yeah, that's
he's probably pretty tied to that pick. What does this, Damo, in your mind, mean for James Bradberry? Is this a definitive move here that Mitchell's got to get on the field and play right away? Or do you say, hey, we got our two veterans, sit and learn from these guys for the year?
I think it means hasta la vista, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think Bradberry's going to be on their roster when training camp opens.
I agree. He might not be on the roster by the end of Sunday. Do you think they can get like a seventh round pick? Maybe. And do you think they could get something for James Bradberry?
Well, there's probably some team out there that didn't watch the tape from last year. So we'll see.
Wow. So, yeah. So that would be a situation where it would say post June 1st, they would mark him and he would be basically released, or they would try to move him over the next 2 days of the draft here. But sounds you guys agree that he's going to be gone. Because, John, you mentioned this earlier in the week that you think he's going to be also released.
Yeah, I thought if they took a – and I was one of the few people, and Damo knows this and he disagrees. I was one of the few people that thought I was kind of interested to see him with Vic Fangio because I think he's a pure zone corner, and I think Vic would have used him correctly. And I thought there was an opportunity for him to have a bounce back year, but now you're never going to, he's never going to get that opportunity. If they took a corner in the first round and that's what they did. And yeah, good guy, but probably the end of the road in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big time. You know, he had a great year the year before. Last year, there was a lot of, you know, it just seemed that he was never really they moved him to slot corner for a couple of weeks due to some injury.
That was a big mistake, by the way, moving the slot corner. I mean, that's a big, long guy who that made no sense to me whatsoever.
Well, and I think maybe that incorporates why you think he could possibly bounce back is, hey, you know, I need a fresh start from that coordinator and what they were trying to do with me. Get me back to where I was more comfortable. And maybe he has a year like John Gannon got out of him. But as you said, it looks like we'll never see that.
Yeah, you know, Bradberry wasn't a slot all that long. I mean, a veteran should be able to bounce back from being put in an awkward position once he gets back outside. And that didn't happen. I mean, right to the end, he was struggling. So,
and by the way, one of the problems with a trade, if they trade him pre-June 1st, they take a pretty significant cap hit, almost $10 million. Whereas if they cut him with the post-June 1st designation, they lose no cap space. They have dead money, but they lose no cap space. So although, they might not even want that seventh-round pick. They may just want to cut him.
Although A.J. Brown's new contract, I'm sure, lowers his cap number.
Oh, yeah.
Significantly this year, so...
Be able to take it on, but is it really that valuable? Is a seventh round pick that valuable? No. I'd rather have the cap space.
Right. Yeah. How about that, Damo? Were you surprised to see right on the minutes before the draft that AJ Brown, there's been a lot of speculation about him, especially after the Smith deal, what his future might look like. And then you've got all these other receivers now trying to get one. Amon-Ra St. Brown gets his, and here's AJ Brown who just pops in and gets one. What about the timing of that deal?
I mean, I was a little bit surprised because I wasn't sure what his future was going to be here, particularly after the way this season went with the situations with him. But clearly, this is a team that is determined to make sure they have the best possible talent around their quarterback. And A.J. Brown is still, one of the top five receivers in the league, along with Smith. I mean, so, there are very few reasons right now for Jalen Hurts to fail. So we're going to get a pretty good idea.
Yeah. Or Kellen Moore. Everybody. Nick Sirianni. Everybody. Right. Yeah. I mean, I've been saying it. A.J.'s the best pure football player on this team. And it was weird with WIP and that it was weird the way it exploded because it was just a goofy poll that somebody put on social media. It's probably an intern. And the Eagles couldn't trade him from a cap standpoint. And then it took off and Kay Adams ran with it and said, what, and asked him on her show. And AJ throughout the whole process was pretty much like, no, I don't want to go anywhere. But AJ is kind of weird in that he tells the truth and he's like, but it is a business. He would put that on the end and people would run with that. I always tell AJ he doesn't want advice from me, but just get off social media and I think he'd be fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, he loves it here. And I mean, the exploding cap helps as well, because you're going to have the new TV deal and it keeps going up and up and up. And if you think about it from 5 years ago or 10 years ago, you couldn't pay two wide receivers this money, but now you can. And yeah, it's a win-win from my perspective, and makes the day that much better for the Eagles, because he's their best player.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, we've looked at, you know, a couple of years ago, we looked and said, well, you know, once they sign Jalen and he gets this big contract, they're going to have to start dumping bodies off the boat. Well, you know, this league has figured out how to squeeze a dollar, you know, every single dollar they can out of, you know, I mean, they're playing in Brazil. I mean, the whole global thing is going to explode. I mean, there's still much money to be made by this league. And that means this cap is going to continue to go up. Would it go up $30 million this year?
Yeah, crazy.
Just amazing.
And by the way, Jeffrey Lurie is a big part of this, and I'm glad how we mentioned him, because other GMs, if you go to your owner as a GM, Damo, and you say, hey, I want to extend so-and-so 3 years before you have to extend so-and-so, they'll be like, get the hell out of my office. I'm not giving them money right now.
Right.
And Jeffrey's like, he's going to save money down the road, because we still have Chase coming. We still have Jefferson. He's not making that $33 million average until 2027.
Yeah,
you know how many receivers are going to pass that number?
I was going to ask, like, the timing of the deal for a guy like AJ, where, you know, Devontae was interesting because I guess he's not really a number one receiver on this particular team. So some people said, well, he signed this deal early, and now he's going to start looking around and say, man, I didn't get as much as so-and-so. But AJ Brown is in a different category. To get him before those guys, that's a pretty big move, I think, by them. Yeah. Even the Smith one you look at and say, okay, that's pretty good.
My bigger
Brown
concern
is on a different level.
My bigger concern, guys, is when 27 rolls around, and if AJ's still playing at the level AJ plays at, he's going to say, oh, I'm underpaid. Well, that's my bigger concern, is that might happen. But from an Eagles perspective, it's like, oof.
Well, Dama, you probably covered many of those instances in the Reed era of, whoa, well, I outperformed my deal. What's going on here? I mean, you saw that often with the Brian Westbrooks and, you know, many of those guys who signed those deals. Now, this one's a pretty big deal, but as John is saying, some of these guys are going to get theirs, and he's going to have this measly $33
million,
and then, you know,
with $84 million guaranteed. Yeah. We'll see how it looks.
You know, Joe Banner's the guy that kind of
pioneered
the signing early.
Yeah.
But what he would do is he would get guys really before their careers exploded, and sign them while they still weren't sure whether they were, you know, while the player wasn't even sure what his career held. And they'd get him at a below market price, and convince him that, hey, we're paying you now. You might be underpaid in a couple of years, but deal with it. You know, that's different than what they're doing now, in that they're, you know, they're certainly paying. No, you know, AJ Brown is not getting a below market deal here, at least right now. Like you said, John, in 2027, he may feel differently, but you know, they've had a knack for, you know, Howie's had a knack for restructuring deals for a year or two with older guys. When it gets to that point, you know, they've been willing to deal with some dead money down the road. That'll probably happen here. But like we were just talking about the cap, I don't think anybody's going to have to worry about dead money in the near future in the NFL.
And by the way, nobody knows Joe better than you. Joe cracks me up because, you know, the way he acted as team president, he's getting all these deals, as you met, and now he's on social media and he's like, this is so dumb, why is Devontae Smith doing it? I love it. He's turned into the agent aspect of it, and he's like, you would have done the same thing, Joe. You would have been trying to do
that. Yeah,
so it's hilarious when you change that.
Well, Joe has spent a lot of his post executive career as an advisor on both sides of the fence to teams, yeah. to teams in negotiations and the players in negotiations. I mean, he had a lot to do with Dak Prescott's deal. You know, so, you know, I think he secretly would like to be a full-time agent, except why should he? You know, he's
exactly. He doesn't need those headaches. But mm-hmm. I just find it's so interesting. He's like, he would have been trying to get that deal done with Devontae. And he's like, why is he doing that deal?
Yeah. I asked John earlier, Paul, you know, was there a moment last night where this board starts to get to a point where you're like, oh my gosh, they're not going to have to move and they might get the choice. You know, was there that kind of moment in this draft, a number that starts happening or a team that did something that you were kind of like, this is really going their way?
Yeah. You know, I mean, you had those 14 offensive players go. So right then, you know that with them looking for edge rusher, offensive line, I mean, the offensive linemen went early. Some, but there still are going to be plenty left, and then cornerback. But then right after that, you know, you had the Colts take Latu, the kid from the edge rusher from UCLA, and Seattle took Murphy, the defensive tackle. So at that point, I was starting to wonder, you had a sense one of those two corners, either Mitchell or Arnold were going to be still on the board. I didn't expect, you know, right up until about 20 that both of them would be there. I mean, that's just, some days, you know, it pays to be lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is Belichick was on the McAfee show last week and was saying about how, hey, we're looking at this board and here's Vince Wilfork. You could go over every scenario in your mind and not get the one that ended up happening last night. I mean, was there any thought in your mind that Arnold and or Mitchell would both be there? Because it almost felt like a fait accompli that they were going to have to move up.
And Cooper DeJean was there as well. A lot of people speculated he might be the Eagles pick, and he's still there, by the way, on day two.
Wow.
So they could have charged, went Kool-Aid McKinstry's there and still there.
Yeah.
Everybody was there.
Howie said last night, you know, it's not in his nature to sit tight.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's the Eagles are not the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, I don't think the Steelers have made a trade in the first round since, you know, before God created the earth.
You would think when Andy got there, they would have changed a little bit.
Did you think with the Eagles at 22 and them at 21 that there, you know, was a chance that the Eagles could try to move up one to get the guy they wanted, or did they seem content with, we'll take whoever you don't think? Because if they wanted the offensive lineman, there had to be some thought that they might have to move that one spot.
Well, yeah, they would have had to go over Pittsburgh for the
offensive. Right, exactly.
If you look at the two teams in front of them, Pittsburgh and Miami, you know, the Eagles have a good relationship with both. I mean, Pittsburgh's got their former VP of player personnel. You know, Miami, they've traded, you know, a number of, I mean, that's who they go to when they need to make a trade. So I think they knew what they were thinking before they actually made their picks. So they knew those guys, you know, at least they knew Mitchell was going to still be on the board. If somebody threw him a curve and traded up, they felt pretty confident that Arnold would be there, if not Mitchell. So,
that's
part of being a good drafting team is knowing what's happening in front of you and knowing who wants to trade up so that you're not totally, you know, it's been a long time since they've been completely blindsided in the first round of the draft by a team that did something that they didn't expect.
Probably got to go back to the Marcus Smith year, right?
Yeah.
They had all the guys started. Well,
and we've had a lot of examples this week of that draft blindsiding them a little bit. And, you know, the evolution of them since then, Damo, a lot of people look at Howie's record as a drafter. Sometimes, obviously, a checkered pass with certain players, Rieger obviously stands out, but you just kind of mentioned something that perked my ears up. That's the thing about being a good drafted team. Do you look at Philadelphia as a team that gets this night right generally?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mean, it's been Howie's evolution as a personnel guy, as a drafter, in that he's established relationships around the league with people, and that's how you kind of figure out what's going on before you're drafting, and he's gotten good at that. I mean, like I said, he's very seldom surprised anymore by anything that's going to happen in front of him.
Yeah, it's almost like experience helps, Damo, and nobody, and nobody seems to understand that. But now we had the day two
in all professions.
Yeah, yeah, it might even help in a certain profession that we know something about. Yeah. You more than me, but I know something about it. That might even help there, but.
Well, it really separates Philadelphia from the others, is that they have the liberty of making mistakes, Howie and his crew. Other teams draft out of desperation for their job.
Yeah.
Yeah. As you saw with the quarterbacks.
What they've also done this year, their free agency class I've been very impressed with, in that I never thought they would get to the draft and have addressed this many needs. So that they were flexible going in. I mean, you know, you looked at them and you said they need it. They still need corner help. They still need edge rushing help. And they could use depth at offensive line. But I mean, that's three spots as opposed to what they were looking at.
But don't forget all-Paul linebacker. Did you mention that? I mean, that's the one spot.
I'm kind of confident that they've dealt with that in free agency, but
yeah. Well, they have. I didn't think they'd have 50 and 53 going into day two, but they do. So now they have a chance to button up and get some at least meaningful competition early on in the process. There's still a ton of good offensive linemen out there. You think, you know, Edgerrin Cooper's a guy who I think could be a day one starter at all-ball linebacker for this team. That's the guy I've kind of. Do you think they would package those two and go off the board? They did it with Saquon at running back in free agency. Let's finally get a linebacker, Paul Dama, which on day two of the NFL draft, or am I just insane? Probably.
I'm okay with their linebacker situation right now. Yeah. I think unless there's somebody, you know, and I've looked at, you know, you look at who's still available in the draft. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that where you say I want to, you know, trade
Junior Colson
to move up to 34, 35 and get him. I think if they sit there, they'll be fine with, you know, picking up edge rushing help, an offensive lineman. I'm still not convinced that they won't go get another corner.
Darius be a nickel. I'll say that
Darius Slay's 33 years old. I mean. You know, and he can't stay healthy.
Slay is
phenomenal on social media. But I like Kaylee Ringo as a prospect. I like Eli Ricks as a prospect.
Yeah.
I think they have outside corner prospects. I still think they need some help in the slot. You know, Avante is a good player, but he can't stay healthy.
You're not sold on Isaiah Rodgers?
I thought it was a nice lottery ticket for the Eagles. Honestly, Damo, he hasn't played in a year.
Yeah.
He showed some nice upside in Indianapolis as a part-time player, but he played outside there because they had Kenny Moore. And I'm like, He if he has a bad summer, they could cut him. They signed him to 1 year, $1.055 million. I'm like, and people think they got Deion Sanders. I'm like, settle down. That's why they're drafting a corner in the first round. Now, he might be an ascending player. He might pick up where he left off, and he might turn out to be a very good player. But he's not even, to me, he's not guaranteed a 53-man roster spot. He's got to show up in August and play well, or he could be out of here that quickly.
Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons I thought they might go Arnold instead of Mitchell is because Arnold has more experience playing inside. Yeah. He's not as fast. I mean, he ran a 4.5 40 at the combine, which kind of turned a lot of people off, I believe. But you know, he's more of a, he seems to fit the mold more of a Vic Fangio.
Yeah, well, that's what everybody told me. He fits the Fangio mold better.
So that's why I was a little bit surprised they went Mitchell. But
well, you know, I was telling Mike Damo, I was talking to an ex-GM, and he brought up a good point to me. He's like, you know, don't get caught up in the scheme stuff because things move so quickly now. Yeah. I mean, if Nick doesn't live up to expectations, he's out. If you bring in a new coach, Vic's out. Yeah. He's going to want his own defensive guy. He might be playing a different defense. So take the better player.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, though, is that how Roseman's envisioning these moves? That, hey, I'm making a move with the thought I'm going to fire this guy.
I don't, not necessarily that, but I think he brings up a good – he does – I think Howie knows
that – the point is valid that you never know what's going to happen and that look, they hired a defensive coordinator last year. They changed him in the middle of the damn season. Yeah. So I don't think that was in on anybody's thought process. And now you're going to the fourth guy for many of these current Eagles.
Yeah.
So yeah, that point is valid that this is the fourth different quarter. And like, that's the way the league is set up, guys, is everybody's looking for the next young, bright mind only for them to get scooped up and get hired someplace else. Like you don't have like the venerable Tom Moore calling plays on the sideline for 49 years for the Indianapolis. Like those guys are out the window now. These guys are hired not to be fired, to be hired someplace else almost immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. And so to the scheme talk, but you brought up edge rusher. There's a guy,
I guess Vic Fangio would fall into the Tom Moore calling plays on the side. I think his head coaching days are probably over.
Look, and the Eagles might hire a head coach and say, hey, you got to keep Vic. You got to keep Vic and Stout. So.
Well, I mean, Vic's getting close to that. Well, not close to that age. He's at that age where you look around. The new thing in the NFL is senior advisor. You look at Dom Capers. Dom Capers is a senior defensive advisor, I think, in Detroit.
Yeah. He moves around so much.
Six of them now. That's what you do when you get when you're a legendary coach, but they don't want to. You know, you don't want to spend time 18 hours a day as a coordinator.
Well, you know, Tama, way back they used to have like 9-man coaching staffs, and now we're going to get to the point where everybody's got a personal coach. We're getting to that level, and you have all these layers and titles.
Yeah, the Eagles I'm 47. At what age can I be a senior advisor? I want that
getting
job.
Close, Mike, you're getting close.
The Eagles have an assistant head coach, an associate head coach. I mean, it's not the time. There was a great episode of Cheers, the old great sitcom, where they didn't have the money to give anybody raises, so they gave them titles. I think that's the NFL, and they made everybody happy with titles.
Yeah,
senior defensive assistant.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, day two is here, and we kind of hinted at it. The Eagles have two picks, 50 and 53. A lot of interesting, players on the board, guys. We're discussed at 22, Cooper DeJean, Kool-Aid McKinstry. If you like a linebacker, you could go down some roles here. Paul, Howie wants to make calls. So is today the day they do something crazy? Because last night was too unconventional for the Eagle fans. Just wake up and see they stayed at 22 and took a guy they wanted. That can't be the way the Eagles draft finishes. Now, can it be?
Well, I mean, John had mentioned earlier, the possibility of them, trading up, trading those two picks for, to move up. They don't have a third right now, although I guess they could get one in a trade up if they traded both of these second round picks. I don't know. I mean, I just think they may be happy staying where they are and, and hoping lightning strikes twice in this draft where the people they want fall to them. You'd mentioned the kid from Western Michigan, John.
Marson Nealon,
They still need edge rushing help. I don't think they're going into this second round saying we've got to get an edge rusher. But if one is, one that they rated highly is there with those picks, I think they'll take one.
And by the way,
they're going to start going from the SEC to the MAC. Is that what's happening in this
round? That's right.
Possibly.
They're leaving Georgia and Alabama. They're going
there's
the
a
Midwest.
Lot. There's still, by the way, at P. Damo Make sure you follow Paul on X. Does a tremendous job. 33rd team here with Jacob Sports, our Friday guy. Just worked out, always works out to get you after the draft. It's phenomenal. But I still think there's a bunch, there's a ton of good offensive linemen still on the board as well. You can get a guy like Cooper Beebe who could at least push Tyler Steen, I think, right away. That Jackson Powers Johnson, I don't know how much versatility he has, but he's a center, but I think he can play in the interior. He could help. You got that kid from BYU if you want lanes there, apparent. They got a, there's a ton of good offensive linemen. I would bet offensive line if the Eagles are they're gonna get one if they keep both picks.
Yeah, you know, one thing we don't know that they do.
Oh, Zach Frazier, Mike. Mike's a West Virginia guy. Sorry, Dama.
No, that's it. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interior linemen that are going to be available. But the one thing they know that we don't is, like, I mean, Hennessy. I mean, how confident are they that he's going to be fine and going to stay healthy? I mean, if he's healthy, man, he gives them one of the, you know, a really top interior lineman.
Yeah, he's a good player.
You know, we don't know that. And I don't know how much, considering his history recently, they want to risk that. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's very possible they go with one of those interior linemen or somebody that they see as a potential down the road replacement for.
Or even a third wide receiver would be interesting to pay, you know, $84 million guaranteed, whatever Devontae got, and then bring in another wide receiver. And then put more pressure on Kellen Moore. That could be in the mix as well to get Tony Franklin, that kid from Oregon. He's out there.
Well, in the words of Micah Parsons, I can't believe how lucky the damn Eagles are. we'll see how lucky they get tonight. Yes, Micah Parsons last night again, just perplexed at the Eagles' ability to just run circles around the Dallas organization. Maybe not on the field. But the front office, it seems that the Eagles win that battle. But you don't win in the front office all the time. You got to win games on the field. The next step tonight, the draft, and, of course, Paul Domowich, 33rd team, and just an outstanding football mind, joined us here on this Friday edition of Birds 365. Great to see you, Domo.
Great to see you guys. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thanks, awesome Domo. Stuff, as always. Been reading and following Domo. It seems like I told him, you know, I remember those years where he was on that beat following those Andy Reid teams. And that was the Hall of Fame voter, right?
Oh, yeah. Domo covered Vic Fangio when he was with the Philadelphia Stars.
Wow. Yeah. Can we get a Philadelphia Stars back here?
Yeah, why not?
Another incarnation. Is this UFL going to make it? I mean, I'm not watching it yet. My buddy Anthony Beck is the coach.
Well, I think there's a role. I mean, now that they're down to one, I think it's good that they whittled down to one league. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the concept of the – I just haven't – I always say I want to get into it, but, you know, I haven't this year. But I see the ratings have been decent, you know.
I kind of bummed that they brought the Stars back from the perspective of they never actually played in Philadelphia, number one.
Did they play the first year in Philly and then Baltimore?
No, I meant the new version. When they They were playing, you know, it was pandemic. They were playing all in one site, wherever it was. But
well, they're trying to – well, this UFL, they play in their own stadiums, right?
Yeah, yeah, okay. They do. Yeah.
We'll have to get Anthony on the show.
But the original Philadelphia Baltimore Stars were sort of legendary. There are a lot of good players on those.
Well, teams. The original USFL was a legendary story that had legitimate Hall of Fame level talents on those teams. It wasn't a developmental league. It was
and
a competitive.
That's what I mean. That was the Stars I remember. So I was like, I don't want to see a bunch of no names playing for the Philadelphia Stars. And, you know.
Yeah. But, well, if I'm filling in here in the short term next week or something, I'll try to get Anthony to come on. And he's done a lot of media. He used to love covering the draft. Anthony Beck. He used to do. You know,
he's the St. Louis coach, right? St. Louis?
He's the St. Louis. He loves it there, too. He played for the Rams, had a cup of coffee with the Rams. Him and Mark Bolger, who both went to West Virginia, were really close friends in college. So He ended up going to the Rams, I think, late in his career. So he ends up kind of getting that connection with St. Louis. But he loves it there. I talked to him.
They draw. They got to go to the environment.
But I will say, he is a huge ambassador for the league. And he is really good, like, in terms of putting the product out there. But really good. I mean, I still think he does Jets preseason games, like pre and post, maybe. He did a lot of Buccaneer stuff. But yeah, we'll try to grab him.
He was doing Buck stuff. Yeah.
We'll try to grab him. And he was doing a lot of ESPN college apps. He was doing a lot of the games on Saturday afternoons. He did a ton of games there. But all right. We'll try to grab him maybe next week if I'm filling in next week. I haven't looked at my schedule. I'm not that far ahead yet, John. I'm sorry.
I can't get past today, man. I got another long day.
I got a four-hour radio show to host in a couple hours. I'm like preparing for on the fly here because I was up too late. You were up too late, but we have another hour for you. Chris Franklin's going to join us in about 19 minutes from now. So I hope everybody, man, there's a lot of people watching here today. What's up on this Friday? We've got a huge boost on, the draft. And we'll talk about that coming up next here on Birds 360.